Big Pat Peck Nissan for your next vehicle. Shop over 500 new Nissans at the only Nissan dealer in Gulfport. Right now, buy a new 2020 Rogue S for $24,074. Visit us on US 49 in Gulfport and drive home your new Nissan today. Shop our complete inventory online at patpacknissan.com. VIN LC724100, MSRP 28,180, includes 1606, dealer discount and 2,500 Nissan customer cash. Tax, title, and fees extra. See dealer for details in 3220. Big Pat Peck Nissan for your next vehicle. Shop over 500 new Nissans at the only Nissan dealer in Gulfport. Right now, buy a new 2020 Rogue S for $24,074. Visit us on US 49 in Gulfport and drive home your new Nissan today. Shop our complete inventory online at patpacknissan.com. VIN LC724100, MSRP 28,180, includes 1606, dealer discount and 2,500 Nissan customer cash. Tax, title, and fees extra. See dealer for details in 3220.
I'm your host, Chris Carr.
And I'm Kristen Johnson. Welcome.
And it's good to be back. We've been off for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And I hope you guys have been enjoying yourselves. We've gotten to try a few new things in the last couple of weeks. We've been working real hard on our Dark Horse Paranormal podcast. The Native American podcast that's coming out about Native American hauntings. And has been a grizzly bear of sorts to get done for some reason.
It's a lot of facts that we've.
There's a lot of history.
A lot of facts that we came up, found in.
Got some really good spirit box clips and an EVP in that. And we're getting that together and trying to make it, fun and not just history, but we want to include the history too because it's important to us. So look for that. Probably at the end of the week, tried the Estes method last week.
Yes, we did.
And if you guys are not aware, this is getting popular from the show Hellier that's on Amazon Prime right now and was developed by a couple of gentlemen on that show, Connor Randall and Carl Pfeiffer, who were resident researchers at the Stanley Hotel in Colorado. Curious that Colorado keeps coming up, and I'll explain that in a minute. Whereas you do a spirit box session, and the person that is listening to the spirit box has noise-canceling headphones on and wears a blindfold and cannot hear the questions being asked. And we had a little experiment with that, but unfortunately, I had a couple glasses of wine, and I took my medication. And most of the recording is me snoring. Mm-hmm. Although we did have some interesting results just prior to that.
It was really cool.
It was fun. And we'll do more on that. And
it's my turn this time. I'm going to be blindfolded.
Yeah. Well, I like that idea.
I know.
I should do. Speaking of that, it's Pat Tuesday. It's Mardi Gras. And
Got the beads.
I should be throwing some beads at you or something, right?
Yeah, you should. Yeah, I don't know.
But we've got an awesome guest tonight. My very good friend, my co-author, and the person who got me started doing this radio business and writing business, Clarissa Vasquez. And she's on with us right now. Hey, Clarissa.
Hi, Clarissa.
What's happening?
What's going on? I want to thank you for that, by the way. And I have a chance to do so on the air for introducing me to this radio gaga and, of course, writing. We have a book together.
Well, the whole radio thing kind of happened by accident. I don't know if you remember, but you and I were doing a lot of interviews, promoting the book that we wrote together. Mm-hmm. And something happened and we got shortchanged on time. And so the guy that was running the network, he says, well, why don't I just give you an hour, of airtime to promote your book? He's like, Clarissa, you know what you're doing and everything. Why don't I just give you an hour of airtime to promote your book? And so I went, okay. And that kind of morphed into you and I having our own show. Radio thing, it was like a happy accident.
That was Hidden World, though you were no stranger to the radio because you've had a radio show on and off for years.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And for our readers that don't know, I'm going to hold this up here. This is our book, and there are apparently very few copies left on Amazon, perhaps one. And the book is called Debunking Common Paranormal Myths, Exploring Psychosomatic Pareidolia. And this is a great book if you're into the paranormal and you want to not make mistakes like post orb videos and things of that nature. And we get real into like a lot of different topics, whether it is, you know, audiophenia. Is that the right word?
Audiophenia.
Apophenia. I'm sorry. It's been a while. I have not read this book in a while.
Apophenia. You helped write it.
I know. I think I wrote that chapter.
Oh, did I write the apophenia chapter?
I'm not sure. We had the Yanni Laurel thing was popular at the time.
I think you wrote the Yanni Laurel chapter, but, you know, a lot of people have approached me after having read the book and knowing my writing style and everything. They're like, did you write the entire book? And I'm like, no, Chris wrote about half of it. And they're like, no, it's almost like you wrote the entire thing. And people cannot tell which sections I wrote and which sections you wrote. And that's how well we work together. And going back and looking at it, as you and I have been doing the last couple of days, going back and looking at it, I can't tell either. I don't remember what I wrote and what you wrote.
Right. Parts of this, I'm like, oh, was that mine or hers? I don't know.
The real world explanations, you know, like is Santa Claus coming to town and, you know, I lost 50 pounds on the paranormal diet. That was all me. And the chapter titles, that was all me. But as far as the rest of the text goes, you know, it was a 50-50 split.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we split up the quotes and yep.
Yeah. Oh God, I remember the quotes. And, we had so much fun with that.
Then there was a picture of Bigfoot. Like, oddly enough, I ended up taking on that surname here on radio with Kristen. And the Bigfoot needed some editing, the Bigfoot picture.
Yeah, I was trying to throw together a graphic. And I did Bigfoot standing in the middle of Stonehenge with a UFO hovering over it, you know, as if it was being abducted. And somehow, some way in the graphic, you were able to very clearly tell that that Bigfoot in that picture was male. And I did not do that deliberately.
It wasn't an actual picture of, you know, Bigfoot's schlong, but yeah, it was something about the way whoever drew it, the way they did the hair and the way it just came out. I was like looking at it going, God, that really doesn't look right.
You called me, I answered the phone, and you're like, Clarissa, Bigfoot has a dingle. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
And that's reflective of the sense of humor that goes throughout the book, because it is a humorous book, and we both have senses of humor, thank God. And we go into all kinds of aspects of the paranormal.
Read the chapter titles, Chris. Tell your listeners about the chapter titles, and they will get a sense of our sense of humor in this very serious book. But that's what makes the book entertaining. You know, it's a very serious book. It's very scientific. There's a lot of really serious information in it, but we wrote it in a way that keeps people engaged and you can actually understand what we're saying.
Right. We have things like shadows, reflections, and portals. Oh my. Apparitions. Don't you see the man eating the hot dog? You know, audio matrixing. Let it snow. Investigation divination, say that three times fast, you know, things of that nature. There's a lot of good info in here, and if you want to get a copy of the first edition, get out there on Amazon. If it's sold out, you can message us. We still have a fan page up on Facebook, Chris and Clarissa fan page. Mm-hmm. You search for it, and I know I've got a few copies hanging around and are signed.
Yep, and I have a few signed copies also. So
we'll send them to you, and we'll take your money.
Yeah. Yeah, because one of us is a poor starving writer.
But you have quite a few books.
I have six out now.
Yeah.
Wow.
I want to get into those, but I thought I would ask you the typical normal question. When did you get into the paranormal, and what got you started?
Okay, this is really weird because I am so not used to being interviewed by you.
I can't imagine what this feels like.
I'm used to conducting interviews with you or being interviewed with you. You know, it's like, and for you to say, you know, when did you get involved in the paranormal? I really want to go, dude,
that
you
must seem really
young.
Weird. Well, you remember that when we did those radio interviews, like promoting the book, and I had no experience with this, I would get nervous and sometimes try to interview the interviewer.
Yeah.
It was like my, you know, insecure moment. Well, I'd be like, well, what was your scariest moment?
I'll tell you mine if you tell me yours.
Drag me out to Spooky South Coast for our first interview.
That must have been
told you that, Chris.
Yes.
like
no, thank you.
Nothing like starting there.
Right.
Not that those guys were. Tim
could have been Coast
great.
To Coast
were,
AM.
Coast to Coast, yeah, with George.
Tim was awesome and everything, but I was just like,
yeah, deer in headlights, like I get, yeah.
Can we just be like, you know, on some unknown show first and a little trial and error. No, Tim Westbrook. All right, thanks.
Great.
But it was awesome, and it went
you
good.
You did fine. I mean, considering that I was in, the night of that interview, I was in Gettysburg on hotel Wi-Fi, and my best friend who was traveling with me was snoring in the room, and you could hear her snoring on the air. And my other friend, there was four of us, piled into a Ford Fusion, and we did this enormous paranormal investigation road trip. We hit 24 states in 15 days and investigated along the way. And so my other friend is like trying to lightly cover my best friend's face with a pillow because
lightly
she was
being
snoring.
The key word.
Yeah, well, yeah, lightly, because we didn't want to kill her,
right?
But the snoring was being broadcast, and so, you know, compared to what was going on my end, you and your nerves did great.
Awesome.
Yeah, but I thought that was kind of fun. It was like a trial by fire.
Yeah.
And certainly, because that's a show I like a lot, and you know that. But yeah.
So what got me interested in the paranormal field?
Yeah. When did you start this craziness? I may know the answer to some of these questions, but you know, our listeners
do know the answers to these. And it's like I said, part of me wants to go, you know, dummy, you already know this. but I have to remember that we're doing a show and I'm actually being interviewed on, you know, a radio network, and your listeners don't know this. And Kristen probably doesn't know this unless she tuned into one of our other interviews. So I got started more than 20 years ago. We're going to say, let's see, 24 years ago. I had my first paranormal experience while I was enlisted in the service. And the experience that I had, it didn't occur to me at all to be frightened. I was just really curious, like, well, what the bleep did just happened here? And
you were in the Air Force, correct?
I was in the Air Force, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for your service as well.
Thank
my
you.
Pleasure.
Yes.
And essentially, I saw a man who was wearing a service uniform, but it wasn't of the time period. It was more of the olive drab combat fatigues that you would have seen in the 60s and 70s. And he walked through a cinder block wall. And this is the Reader's Digest version of what happened. This is the condensed version of what happened. But he essentially walked through a cinder block wall and disappeared. And so the internet was still in its infancy. You know, I did not have Google or Bing or, you know, or any of those. You know, there was no, hey Siri, what did I just, you know?
There might have been a Lycos. I remember Lycos.
Yeah, Lycos came along. Lycos came along in like 2000.
CompuServe.
You know, there was no, you know, Alexa, did I just see a ghost? Oh, crap, I said that too loud. Okay, she didn't answer me.
That's been recorded somewhere, just so you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I almost turned on my unit there. So I went off base to the local library and got a library card, and I started checking out and reading every book that I could get my hands on. And, you know, paranormal TV wasn't a thing yet. So, you know, occasionally there was something on Unsolved Mysteries or, you know, or something to that effect. But, you know, Ghost Hunters hadn't hit the, you know, hadn't hit the television screens.
Sure, sure.
And so I started reading every book I could get my hand on, and, you know, started learning about EVP and using an analog tape recorder and using Polaroid cameras, because the images could not be altered during processing. You know, it was like instant gratification. Right. And so I started running around, you know, with a Polaroid camera and a big old clunky analog tape recorder. Mm-hmm. And
still not a bad way to go.
You know, yeah, except for the fact analog, that Polaroid is so stupid expensive.
It is. It is. And it was then in a way, too. You know,
yeah, it was.
Always kind of gross. It was back then it was about 50 cents a photo.
Yeah.
You know, but I was single and in the service and had no bills. I had no, you know, I wasn't a mom yet. wasn't even married yet at that time. And so, you know, the only bill I had really was my truck payment and my car insurance and the fuel to get around to all of these reported haunted locations. And so I could afford the Polaroid film. And so it was, yeah, that's how I got my start, was, you know, 20 something years ago.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that there was, you know, paranormal investigations before Ghost Hunters. So it's an interesting point you make, you know, in the old Hans Holzer books that, you know, I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Of.
Hans Holzer, Ed Warren, mm-hmm. you sure. know, I read anything I could get my hands on.
And you can take that back to the spiritualist movement, really further than that, if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah. You know, take it all the way back to the Fox sisters and their, you know, their whole little system of, you know, knocking and tapping and everything. You know, good times. I think technology has advanced considerably since the days of the Fox sisters.
yeah, yeah.
You know, the fakes are able to fake it a whole lot better.
right. But in truth, it does seem like anything works. You know, technology doesn't seem to matter. It could be anything from divining rods to, you know, as a seem to matter.
Didn't experiment not long ago. My fish tank it ran low water, so it like broke down like a battling some. So I have a little bit of haunting in my house now. So bunch of spirits. So I put on my recorder. I said, okay, whatever you'd like to say to me. And I put it right next to the fish tank. And honestly, ask Chris, all you can hear is water itself. You can hear Chris and trying to tell me stuff.
You hear Chris's name. You hear words. And it's not really clear, but it's right there, you know, and it's kind of like that
in
idea.
The water
like,
noise.
Like using white
like a white noise
or,
generator. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Kind of like that, but it's the
cool.
dripping of the water. And yeah. You can hear it. We have a recording of that. We're planning to use this.
How big is your tank?
55-gallon.
Is it a long or a bow front?
Long.
It's a 50 long? So yes. Do you have an Aquion double hang-on, or do you have a canister on there?
No, the double hang-on.
Double hang-on? Yeah.
I believe so, yep.
Yeah. So,
it makes a lot of noise when it goes down.
Well, and what you can do to increase your, do you also have an air bubbler?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. So what you can do is take your pump for your air bubbler and put it on the lid for your double hang on.
Okay.
And the this is going to sound absolutely nuts, but
no, nothing sounds nuts to us right now.
The hum from your air pump sitting on top of your filter, or depending on if you've got a lid system that isn't glass, if you don't have a glass lid, if you've got the, you know, the plastic lid. You could do it there, but it won't be as loud as if you put it on your filter, because your filter has, you know, is hollow to a certain extent. So it's going to amplify the hum from your air pump.
Okay.
See, I've got 6 aquariums, so I I know how to generate white noise. and so, yeah, try putting your pump on top of your filter.
I'll create a vibration and
some. Yeah, that's
what, like, it'll do is it'll amplify the hum. Mm-hmm. So you'll still have the white noise, but it won't be as loud as the water trickle.
Okay. I will do that experiment. Thank you. So I guess you've done this?
Yeah, a couple of times.
Awesome. That's cool.
I stumbled onto the air pump thing by accident. Because I was moving things around and needed to get my air pump out of the way, because it kept, it would vibrate itself up against the wall, and it would just sit there and, you know, against the wall. Yeah. Like, oh, I can't have that. And so I was moving other things and just temporarily set it on the filter. And I'm like, oh. I'm like, that would be a really good white noise generator, because it's a consistent sound.
Right. Exactly. It's the way I felt too.
We definitely got some kind of communication in there. I mean, you can hear words, but you can't pay close to them out.
You hear my name several times.
Hear this word, you hear that word, but you can't put it all together in anything.
Right.
At least not yet. You know, we've tried. And that's it. It's just interesting, you know. If there's a way to connect, I think, you know, they will find it. And some of that is what I want to add to the book, because we've found that out, and among, you know, several other things. I want to work with creating a feedback loop with video and doing that and going through it frame by frame.
Yeah, so you and I talked about that last night on the phone, I think. And I want to learn a little bit more about that, because
very interesting.
That's something I want to try.
Can be like, whoa, oh my God, that's totally that person's face. Yeah. And yeah, right. That's a real thing. So that's kind of cool. And you've done a lot of work with the Kinect.
SLS. Oh, the SLS. I would love to hear that.
Well, I've done a lot of work with both the X-Cam or X. Crikey. The Kinect version and the other one. Right, we have both on the team, and I've worked with both of them. I think the other one's called the X-Cam or something. And you know, both have their advantages and disadvantages. But the one thing I want to point out, when you're using SLS technology, because you know we are in, you know, the day and age. And I think you and I kind of talked about this last night, you know, with Gen X being, you know, the last do it the hard way generation. You know, everything, you know, beyond Gen X has been all about instant gratification. And so there are investigators out there that are looking for that instant gratification. And that's what makes the SLS camera so appealing, because it gives the illusion of instant gratification. You know, you can actually look at the screen and everything. And, anomaly detected.
It's going to try to draw an anomaly in any way it can. Yes. I mean, I like the idea of the infrared rays projecting across. And if something crosses that light spectrum that looks at all like a body, the algorithm's going to try to create a body.
Right.
You know, but I don't know that it's foolproof, but I don't have a lot of experience with it.
Yeah, no, it's not. It is not. There are way more false positives out there than there are actual detected anomalies, you know, and it'll pop up on there, you know, anomaly detected, you know, and it'll put a little stick figure up there in the shape that it thinks it's seeing. And then, you know, and people are like, oh my God, I just, you know, I saw proof of a ghost and, oh, you know, holy crap. You know, when really, you know, what it's picking up is, you know, because you're using this in the dark and there is some difficulty to actually see in the dark after you've been looking at that really bright screen, you know, that your eyes really do not adjust well going back and forth from the screen to your surroundings. And so what you fail to see is, you know, over in the distance where it's detecting an anomaly, there is actually a floor lamp, you know, that is, you know, it's about 4 feet tall, you know, and kind of human shaped, you know, if you think that, you know, right. Lampshade and everything. And so it's detecting that, you know, as a human shaped anomaly. And so people really need to take their surroundings into consideration, because the SLS cameras, regardless of which version you have, is very, very, very prone to pareidolia. It is making a conclusion out of incomplete data.
In fact, that's its job, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one nice thing about the Kinect version is that it does give you an infrared picture side by side to your SLS image. It gives you an infrared picture right next to it, so you can actually see, you know, what you're looking at. You can actually see in the dark what you're looking at. It gives you a side-by-side view, and that's nice, but it does not give you, you know, the audio input or the heat signature or anything like that. So, you know, both have their advantages and disadvantages. And really, you know, if you can use the instrument and detect an anomaly with it and then follow it with the instrument without losing it, then chances are your anomaly is legit. But if you move, you know, a fraction of an inch and it disappears, you've got nothing.
It was trying to make something out of nothing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Electronic pareidolia. We should write a book about electronic.
There you go.
Well, just I think it should be part of the second edition, you know, because you've had some time with it now. And there's definitely some other things I want to try. And I've certainly learned, like in this last year, it's been very, very much an eye-opening experience as far as paranormal occurrences go.
Yeah, yeah.
Between Kristen and I, and it's just been like pretty mind-blowing, some of the things that have happened. But speaking of mind-blowing, keep an eye on the time. You sent me some pretty amazing EVPs, and
I was blown away.
Our listeners that we would play some of these EVPs because they are so good. And before we get into that, I'm going to mention real quick, because I don't want to lose it time-wise. You founded the Colorado Coalition of Paranormal Investigators back in 2004.
Yes.
Yes. And you've been at this. I think most of these clips come from investigations that you guys have done since then. Were they
all of the clips that I sent you are CCPI files? Yes.
Yep. They're CCPI files. That's what I thought. And I wanted to mention that before we went forward, just so we don't lose sight of it, because 2004, that's a long time. It's 2020,
absolutely.
16 years.
Yep.
Your team's been together, and that is a tough thing to do these days. And
we are the second longest running team in the state of Colorado.
Wow.
Yeah. Kudos to that.
Yeah. There's one other team in the state that has been around longer than us, and they've only been around since 99.
And
so they've got 5 years old.
They may have that time, but I know from talking to you how busy you guys are. I mean, you're out pretty much every weekend. You guys are really booked pretty solid. So this is not a team that investigates 4 times a year. This is a team that is out all the time.
Yeah. Yep. We are out all the time. Well, I can't say we because I'm currently on leave of absence, but the team is out all the time.
Well, it's 16 years. You've been out there most of the time.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it kills me to be missing investigations right now, but it's something that I have to do, you know, at this, you know, because it is for me to investigate right now is not safe. You know, I've been a, you know, firm advocate, you know, of, you know, do not investigate when you're sick or injured or even emotionally susceptible. And so, you know, Chris, as you know, my life kind of went in the toilet last year between, you know, deaths and illnesses and injuries and broken bones and oh my God.
No, and, I understand you have had a real year from hell.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, my life went in the toilet, but I'm coming back.
You're bouncing back.
Yes. Yes.
You're coming back. So
these, yeah, I could not stop listening to these clips, Clarissa. I could not. I was like, these are unbelievable. I've never heard anything so great, so clear.
Yeah, well, you know, I wasn't going to send you the Class C stuff, you know.
Well, no, but from what we're getting now, excuse me, we've only gotten one really good one like that. Most of them are very, you know, they're very light, very but faint. These are great.
Yeah, these are very, very and these clear. Are EVPs. These are not ITC attempts.
Correct. These are
right.
The three legit. Clips you're going to play tonight are just straight up EVPs you received. I believe these are all untouched, correct?
Yes.
Just the raw recording.
Yeah, it's just the raw recording. I don't edit.
You really need to listen to them because the voices are so clear. It sounds like another person in a room. Their voices are as loud as the other people in the room.
Yeah.
It's not the whispery, you know.
You want me to set them up? Which one?
No, which no. One Joe will do this for us. Okay. The first clip is Dead Bird.
Okay.
Maybe you want to give us a little background on Dead Bird.
That's what I was asking. You want me to set this up?
Yep, please.
So Dead Bird was, we were investigating a 3-story farmhouse in Western Colorado, and everyone in the building, it was vacant. The owners could not keep it rented. Tenants would, you know, sign a lease, and within 30 days were breaking their lease saying, you know, keep my deposit, I'm out. And every investigator was having a personal experience tailored to their comfort threshold. You know, people that were unnerved by being touched were being touched. People that were unnerved by seeing things were seeing things, you know, or hearing things, you know, and everything. And I was getting a little torqued because everybody's having all of these personal experiences and I'm not. And, so there was electricity in the house, but no heat. The gas had been turned off, but there was electricity there. So we went to use the wood burning stove, but we had to knock all of the dead birds out of the stove pipe before we could get a fire going. I know, really gross, right? Right. And
Not so, my idea of kindling.
Yeah, no. So, you know, we got the fire going, got the house heated up, you know, we're investigating and everything. And then myself and two other investigators later that night, we were up in the attic area. And I'm looking through the attic using a night owl monocular, which allowed me to see in the dark, but it didn't record. And I look down on the floor across the room, and I see what looks like a dead bird on the floor. And you hear me get, and the audio recorder was 15 feet away from me. It was far away from me. So you hear me almost, I wasn't whispering, but because of the distance, it sounded like I was whispering. And you hear me go, ew, what is that? And this voice comes, you know, listening to the audio file afterwards, you know, you hear this voice comes back and says, you know, dead bird. And then you hear me go, hey, is there a dead bird in there? And you hear the other investigators go, oh, no, I don't know where, you know. And so my personal experience, and it was tailored to my threshold because I wasn't unnerved until after I got home and listened to that audio file and discovered that who or whatever was in that house was in my head. It knew I thought I was seeing a dead bird.
No, absolutely. And it says dead bird. And that's the part of the clip. And I want to clarify that because the voices are so distinct in the clip. Yeah. Dead bird was said by no one in the room.
Correct.
It was an answer to Clarissa's questioning.
Yeah. Well, and you can hear the other two investigators. You hear one of them go, "Oh no," and you hear the other one go, "I don't know where." And and so, you know, you can distinctly hear, you know, all three of our voices. And you know, when people ask me, you know, what's the scariest experience you've ever had, that's the story that I tell them, because they were in my head, and it's scary enough with just me in there, but to know that, you know, there was some unseen person or entity or whatever, you know, up in my noodle with me. Why? Yeah, no. Back the truck up. Yeah, no.
Right.
So, yeah. So that's the history on the dead bird clip.
Awesome. Joe, we're ready for clip one.
Please.
Is there a dead bird in there?
Hello.
Ew, what is that? Is there a dead bird in there?
Hello.
Sorry, guys. I ran it three times.
Oh, so. It should be done by now.
That's great, though. Thanks.
No, that's great. It's good to hear that one a couple of times. It's a short clip, but the dead bird is so clear. And it's like, oh, my God. You know, and what a weird scenario.
Yeah.
It really was. Yes.
Yeah. What's the next one?
I don't want to die. And that's creepy because it sounds like a kid.
Yeah. That one was actually captured with a GoPro.
Okay.
We had a full spec GoPro stationed at the foot of the stairs. And Chris, you already know this, but Kristen and your listeners don't know this. It takes a lot for me to, number one, categorize a location as being haunted, and number two, for me to use the dreaded D word.
Okay.
And, you know, in all of the years that I have been investigating, and all of the years, you know, that CCPI has been around, you know, we only had two cases that I would have categorized, you know,
as the D.
Using the dreaded D word.
Right.
And because I think the investigators are far too liberal with that term.
Well, they are, and that's because of TV and
yeah. You know, that. Yep. Yeah. But in 2017, we had two more. So giving us a grand total of four for the year. That was also the same year that the Vatican sanctioned like a 500,000 new priests or new priests to become exorcists. Mm-hmm. It was all happening in the same year. And we're like, what the heck? You know, we
have rising trend.
Two cases in Western Colorado that we are officially categorizing as demonic, and the Vatican is sanctioning, you know, 500,000 new exorcists. What is going on?
The Vatican could have been influenced by Ghost Adventures, or am I really going out on a limb there?
I don't know.
I'm just kidding.
I don't know that Bagans has that much pull to bend the Pope's ear. But then again, maybe the Pope has a thing for two tight pieces and an enormous biceps.
It has become a popular thing. You know, some of these guys, you know, there's a reputation there, but I'm not going to go there tonight.
Yeah. But you know, one of the criteria or you know, one of the common beliefs is that, you know, the dreaded D word, in order to pull at the heartstrings of the living, they will disguise themselves as children.
Right.
Which is a very scary thought, because we have something like that going on with us right now, Chris and I.
Yeah.
Spirit we're dealing with. Yep.
Yeah.
And we wonder, you know, is it more? And yep.
Yeah. This clip was captured at one of our locations that was ultimately classified as being demonic in nature. And we did end up having to get the church involved to.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The clip was captured with a GoPro camera. It was not captured with an audio recorder. It was captured with a GoPro camera. Uh-huh. And you clearly hear this little girl, or, you know, what sounds like a little girl, you know, just shrieking, "I don't want to die," and calling for mommy.
Oh, my God.
We're ready for that clip, Joe.
Or you know, I'm a freak. I got to play them several times when they're short.
That's fine. Yeah. That's right. Great. Please, thank you.
Feel free. Yeah. We want them there. Thank you. Awesome. Yeah, that's a really cool clip, and the childlike quality of the voice is kind of disturbing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that, and I think we have one more clip, and then maybe we can talk about some of your books.
Is that What's This Stuff?
Yes.
What's This Stuff? What is the story about What's This Stuff?
That was actually a case that we worked in Utah, you know, because we cover, you know, Colorado and Eastern Utah, because nobody takes Eastern Utah. You know, Eastern Utah is like the redheaded stepchild of Utah. And so, you know, so we cover it. And these people were so freaked out. They left their home for the entire weekend, and we got the house from Friday night to Sunday night. And so, you know, we went in guns a-blazing, you know, all of the equipment, you know, it's like, you know, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. We've got the time, let's do it. And so while we were setting up our stuff, we got, as you know, Susan has a Boo Buddy. And she had already set up.
Which is the already, bear?
Yeah, the talking bear. She hadn't turned the Boo Buddy on yet, but had turned on the audio recorder that she always sits next to him. And so, you know, we're setting up all of our equipment and everything. And this was the only piece of credible data that we got all weekend. And while we were setting up the equipment. And you clearly hear this voice go, "What's this stuff?" You know, very Valley Girl sounding, you know. Like, you know, I can imagine like Alicia Silverstone in Clueless or something going, "What's this stuff?"
It was at that point that they immediately left.
It says something a little accurate, too.
We're haunting another house because you guys are setting up all this crap and we're not.
Yeah. What's this stuff?
What's this stuff? So yeah. We're good for that clip, Joe.
You back, baby.
Cool. Thank you. Isn't that funny? You know, they are kind of like pranksters sometimes. You know, you wonder, are they goofing on us? Are they just...
We wonder this all the time.
Yeah, and there's dozens more EVPs on my website. So,
yeah, and you know, what website just, is that, Clarissa?
That is coloparanormal.com. C-O-L-O-paranormal.com.
Coloparanormal.com? Mm-hmm. Excellent. And where can people find CCPI?
That is CCPI. Coloparanormal.com.
I apologize. For some reason, I thought you had CCPI in the title of that website.
Well, it
my
it
bad.
Used to be. It oh. used to well, be. However, our domain got purchased out from under us. And I still owned an old domain back from when I was using like Yahoo Site Builder to, you know, to do the website and everything. I had no idea I still owned it, but I tried it and it's like, yeah, you still own this. You can use this. So our website changed, our web address changed, but it's still the same.
Well, that's a good site. That's very catchy, actually. Kalo Power Paranormal. I like that. Cool. Great. Let's talk about maybe some of your books. We got a little bit of time left. You have a variety of other books that don't include me that are fantastic. My favorite.
Yeah, I have five that
Ghost
don't
Hunting include in Colorado. I really like this book because you go into the geological aspects of hauntings and crystals and the what's under the earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, there's some geological stuff. There's a lot of geographic psychic trauma. I really delve into that. You know, I coined the phrase, the acronym GPT, and, you know, started calling it geographic psychic trauma, just like you and I came up with psychosomatic pareidolia.
One of us did.
We did it together. We did it together.
We did the movie.
You know, it,
that
it's
is your phrase. It's a good one. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, psychosomatic pareidolia was the
brain. Thought to be like a recording, almost like a record player that can hold a memory or an imprint.
Yeah, more like an amplifier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, quartz crystals was used in radios for a long time, like transistor radios and stuff. You know, because it can amplify the waves and the frequencies and send it out. And so there's been a lot of discussion about, you know, limestone. And it's like, you know, limestone is just, you know, calcified remains of dead plants and animals. Like, that doesn't make any sense at all. And so, you know, I started, you know, researching and, you know, looking into piezoelectricity and things like that. And when, you know, locations that have a higher mineral content in their geology, you know, tend to be, you know, based on, you know, where people are saying, you know, locations are haunted, tend to have higher activity than locations that sit on primarily limestone. And so, you know, did a lot of work with that to, you know, do that whole chapter in ghost hunting in Colorado and, you know, also talked about, you know, geomagnetic fluctuations and lunar phase and solar flares and all kinds of really fun stuff. And there's a great little tour guide in the back of the book of some of Colorado's most haunted locations for people that, you know, decide, hey, I want to go check out Colorado. It's, you know, the back of the book has a neat little section, you know, where you can check cool. some stuff out. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
That's awesome. You also have Phantom Trains and Haunted Rails of the U.S. out there.
That
very interesting take on the paranormal. People don't often talk about haunted trains, but it's a thing.
Well, you know, that one has really surprised me. Because a few years ago, I don't even remember how many years ago it's been now, it's at least five. I was looking for a Christmas present for my son and a friend of mine, both of whom were very much into trains and both of whom were very much into ghosts. And I'm like, I'm going to find a book about, you know, haunted trains. You know, because you hear the stories, you know, just like Phantom Hitchhikers and stuff. You hear the stories about haunted trains and haunted airplanes and stuff. And I couldn't find one. I could not find a book anywhere about haunted trains. I was getting really bummed. And I'm like, well, dummy, you're a writer. Why don't you write one?
It's easy solution to that.
And so
a very
I
interesting
did.
Book. This
yeah.
book is awesome. Yeah.
And that book has actually sold more copies than all of my other books combined.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, I think the idea is just really interesting. Haunted trains, like, you know, people don't talk about that. It doesn't get enough press, if you will.
No, it doesn't.
You know, what would you say was the most haunted train in the U.S. and why do you think it is?
There was a train and it was, believe it or not, I found the most haunted train or haunted railway stories in Colorado.
Really?
Yeah. And there was a train on the western slope of Colorado. It was the locomotive was the 109, and it was in a fatal crash, and they rebuilt the locomotive and put it back on the same route. And a short time later, it was in another fatal crash.
Hey.
And in different, you know, different areas, and they rebuilt it and put it back on the same route. And after the third fatal crash, they went, okay, you know, we are decommissioning this locomotive. Mm-hmm. And there have been no fatal crashes, you know, in the area since. But mm-hmm. at night, you can hear what sounds like a vintage locomotive whistle, you know, coming through the canyon.
Wow.
You can hear the whistle of the Dread 109.
It's interesting because Colorado as a state really was built on the gold rush.
Yep.
You know, through history. And there were all these Native American treaties that were broken and they pushed back and battles and different atrocities that Chris and I have researched and, you know, looking at different aspects of it. Mm-hmm. And you have to wonder if that maybe plays a role in some of this haunting.
If you want some material for your research, Chris, go back and reread Ghost Hunting in Colorado, because I talk about three different events involving the Native Americans here in Colorado that have resulted in hauntings. There's the Battle of Milk Creek, the Meeker Massacre, and the Sand Creek Massacre.
Yeah, Sand Creek Massacre I'm familiar with. And yeah, I've spoken on that one before. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty brutal.
Terrible.
Pretty brutal to have the surrender flags out there. Run up the white flag and you guys will be okay. And I'm just gonna kill you.
Yeah, no.
One by one.
The Meeker Massacre and the Battle of Milk Creek are 25 and 35 minutes respectively from my house.
Wow.
Yeah. So you know,
we have a journey in October. Like, seriously, I want to put this together. Mm-hmm. Chris and I, we need our own road trip.
Yes, we do.
Do it. You know, if you've got the means and you've got the desire, do it. I never turn down the opportunity for a road trip if I can do it.
You have a children's book, No Monsters Here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That book I wrote with the objective to empower children to take control of their surroundings, conquer their fears of the dark, and kind of explain to kids, you know, what happens if a group of investigators comes into their house.
Pretty good idea.
Yeah. Awesome. And at the back of the book, there's a certificate, you know, making the child a junior investigator.
Oh, that's really great.
Yeah. So, that's really cute.
I like that.
You know, it teaches kids how to debunk, but also explains, you know, what's going on in their house if the investigators do have to come.
I wish I had one of those.
You have a fictional or maybe semi-fictional book called Ghosts of the Heart.
Ghosts of the Heart is fiction, but it's loosely based on some of my actual experiences. And three of the characters in the book are actually different aspects of my personality. So a lot of people that read it, you know, like to go, oh, that one's her. That one's definitely her. You know, they most of the time they get 2 out of 3. I think there's only one or two people that have gotten all three. But people like to read that one and go, oh, yeah, that's her. Oh, that one's her. But yeah, it's loosely based on some of my actual experiences in the 20 plus years that I've been investigating.
And I know we're running out of time, but one of the big things I wanted to cover with you was the Melrose Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
That you are now the resident paranormal researcher, investigator, host. Yes. Hostess with the mostest.
I am the paranormal guru at the Melrose Hotel, which for those who are fans of, you know, the show featuring the goofball with the too tight t-shirt, that location was actually on the show a couple of years ago. And the show fabricated a lot of what they claimed as far as the history of the show. And believe it or not, they didn't turn their findings over to the hotel owners. They just, you know, packed up their stuff and left and said, thank you. See ya.
Right.
Yeah. And so,
at this point to come back, they have to talk to you.
Yeah. In order to come back, they've got to go through me.
And this is the Melrose Hotel in Grand Junction, Colorado.
Yes.
A very haunted, very well-known haunted location.
Ridiculously haunted. I love that place.
I can't wait to go.
Oh, I love that place. It's such a cool place. You know, it is so old. It was built as a hotel. It has never been anything other than a hotel. It has never closed its doors. It's well over 100 years old. But if you recall, you know, those old hotels, didn't have private bathrooms. They had shared bathrooms. And there are only a handful of rooms that have private bathrooms in this building. You know, a lot of the rooms, you don't have to share, you know, a community bathroom.
Right. That was sort of commonplace at one time. Yeah.
Yeah. And they maintained that integrity aspect of the hotel as the years have gone by. So, you know, you're staying in a legit haunted historical location, you know, that may or may not have a bathroom.
I think you have a book on haunted hotels coming up. I do. I think it's going to be in the works. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, the idea about haunted hotels, it was monkeyed with a while ago, but I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know.
I still have the Stanley out there, of course.
The Stanley and the Hotel Colorado. And
yeah, there's quite a few. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Colorado's pretty haunted.
Yeah, I don't know. And there may already be a book about Colorado's haunted hotels. I don't know. If there isn't, maybe I will write it.
You should.
Well,
I think you should.
I don't know. I've got so many other book projects in the works that.
Well, second edition of our book needs to come our way. And I've been giving this a lot of thought lately, and then what I want to add to it. And some of the things, especially that Chris and I have gone through this past year, are really kind of opened my eyes and widened my lens to like what is in the paranormal scope.
For monumental savings, pick Pat Peck Honda. Shop our incredible selection with over 1,100 new Hondas available. Pick a new 2020 Accord Sedan LX CVT. Lease for just $249 a month. 36 months, zero security deposit. Pick Peck Honda today. Visit us at 11151 US 49 in Gulfport or shop online anytime at patpeckhonda.com. Stock number LA052085-111, 12,000 miles per year. 2099 down payment, tax and fees extra. Unapproved credit through HFS. See dealer for details. Ends 3220. Pick Pat Peck Nissan for your next vehicle. Shop over 500 new Nissans at the only Nissan dealer in Gulfport. Right now, buy a new 2020 Rogue S for $24,074. Visit us on US 49 in Gulfport and drive home your new Nissan today. Shop our complete inventory online at patpecknissan.com. VIN LC724100, MSRP 28,180. Includes 1606 dealer discount and 2,500 Nissan customer cash. Tax, title, and fees extra. See dealer for details. Ends 3220.